The Supreme Court will confront one of the most direct constitutional issues involving marriage. Does the 14th Amendment guarantee someone the right to marry a person of the same sex? Let's bring in Vanderbilt Law Professor Brian Fitzpatrick. Brian once clerked for Justice Antonin Scalia. He also clerked for a judge on the 9th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals that was appointed by Ronald Reagan. So that gives you an idea of the folks that he's hung around, and that's pretty good company. Brian, good morning. Welcome.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it. Good morning.
So how will Justice Scalia write about this, do you think, and will he prevail?
Well, I think everyone knows where Justice Scalia stands on this, and his view is that the Constitution does not speak one way or the other to whether gays should be allowed to get married. The Constitution is silent on it, and as such, Scalia's view is that it's left to the democratic process to decide whether gays can get married or not. And I think most of us also believe that he will not prevail on that, that probably by a vote of 5-4, the court will go the other way and say that even though the document is silent, there's been a lot of Supreme Court precedents that have built up over the years that suggest that the state cannot discriminate against gays. And so I suspect that's how the court's going to come out.
That assumes the state is discriminating against gays, and that's the central argument that nobody is having here. Does the state law that says marriage is restricted to one man and one woman really discriminate against gays? Gays can get married too. They can't marry who they want, but everybody can get married to a person of the opposite sex, so everybody is treated exactly the same, even though it doesn't satisfy everybody's yearning, whether it's natural or not. Why is that argument not even tested, or has it been?
Well, I'll tell you, frankly, a similar argument was made decades ago with regard to interracial marriage.
Mm-hmm.
Folks said, you know, blacks can get married, whites can get married, they just have to get married to someone of the same race, and that argument didn't fly back then.
Sure, but that argument created artificial differences based simply on color and race and things like that. There are not artificial differences between men and women. There are actual differences that go directly to the question of mating and, you know, being a permanent mate of someone and why you want to be a permanent mate of someone, et cetera, et cetera. To me, that using that as the similar case is just completely out of line. There's no similarity to those two circumstances.
Well, I think you've hit on, you know, what is the main source of the disagreement here. And so I think it's fair to say that this is discrimination, what's going on here. The question is whether there is a good reason for the discrimination. The state discriminates all the time.
Yes.
You know,
exactly.
Against rich people, against poor people, against smart people,
exactly.
Against not smart people. There's all kinds of discrimination out there.
Against married people and unmarried people.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. The question is, what kind of reason do we ask the state to come up with in order to make that discrimination legal? And for most discrimination, we don't require very much of a reason at all. The court scrutinizes most everything. Type of discrimination under what's called the rational basis test. It's a very low standard. As long as you come up with some conceivable reason for something, it's legal. But for other categories of discrimination, race and gender, the court has required heightened scrutiny or a really good reason for the discrimination. And so one of the battles here today is whether for gays we're going to stay with the rational basis scrutiny or we're going to go up to some kind of heightened scrutiny. And in the past cases, the court has not said whether they're going to do heightened scrutiny for gays, but the opinions have effectively required heightened scrutiny for gays. The last marriage case we had regarding the Defense of Marriage Act, the federal government level, you know, Justice Kennedy's opinion basically said we can't conceive of any good reason why you'd want to do this to gays. And the way he wrote it, it sounded like he was requiring heightened scrutiny like you would for race or gender.
Yeah. Doesn't that heightened scrutiny, though, go into the area of personal preference? Whether it is a genetically inclined personal preference or not, doesn't it go into the area of personal preference? And then doesn't that open up an entire new field of possible discrimination that can be challenged in the future.
Well, yes and no. I mean, I think that the proponents of gay marriage would say there are lots of categories of discrimination that we require heightened scrutiny for, even though the people involved are making a choice. And the example they would give is religion. Religion is a choice, yet if the government discriminates against people because of their religion, that requires a compelling interest, requires heightened scrutiny. And so a lot of the categories are, you know, biological, but some of the categories where we require heightened scrutiny are choices. And so, again, you know, the central question here today is, are we going to add gays to the list of those categories where we require a very good reason from the government, not just a rational reason?
And if the ruling goes as expected, then what could possibly be the argument against, for instance, multiple marriage, you know, polygamy? Because it's certainly as natural, it's a more natural tendency to reject monogamy than it is to be attracted to the same sex.
Well, you know, I think these are some of the hardest questions for the lawyers today, honestly. You know, I did a moot court, which is like a practice argument for one of the lawyers that is arguing for the plaintiffs that are suing the state of Tennessee last week. And I think the hardest questions for the lawyers to answer are you know, the next cases. And the questions that I asked were about what if two siblings want to get married?
Right.
And is there a constitutional right to that? Or let's say one state like California lets two siblings get married and those people move to Tennessee. Does Tennessee have to recognize that?
Right.
Those are hard questions because on the one hand, you know,
are they
maybe...
I'm sorry.
Yeah, go ahead.
Are they appropriate questions for the judicial branch of government, or aren't these more appropriate questions for the legislative branch?
Well, I'll tell you, Justice Scalia's view is this is definitely more appropriate for the legislative branch. And I think maybe even as a matter of first principles, I think that's where a lot of people would come down. On the other hand, we do have now decades and decades and decades of precedents where the Supreme Court has intervened and not left it to the legislature. And so now the question today is, are we going to treat gays the same way or not?
Yeah.
And so as a matter of first principles, it's one thing, but, you know, the Supreme Court has deviated from those for a long, long time.
In the whole scheme of court cases, Roe v. Wade, Brown, others, how big is this?
I think this one is going to be just as big. I think this is a case that we're going to remember a long time from now as the case where the Supreme Court did for gays what the Supreme Court did for women and for African Americans.
And will it stop there?
It's hard to say.
Or will it open up that Pandora's box that I spoke of earlier?
It's hard to say. You know, the truth of the matter is, at any given time, it seems like the Supreme Court is making radical changes. But, you know, I think only history will kind of tell us whether this is a radical change or not. 50 years from now, will we look back at this and say, gosh, the Supreme Court really led society down a wrong path?
I think society is leading the Supreme Court down the wrong path. I think that this is a societal change. It's coming regardless of what the Supreme Court does, but it comes faster because of the Supreme Court, and it may be and it's an area that the Supreme Court has no it opens up. It's a bigger change in the law than it is for society, in my opinion. Right or wrong?
Well, I think it's a good point. I think society has kind of already made this decision.
Exactly.
That's a fair point. Yeah. And so all
this
Supreme
is a huge change in the law, I think. And I think it's a bigger change in the law than most legal experts expect it to be.
It could be. You know, it kind of depends on how they write the opinion. It certainly could be a big change in the law.
And you're going to be in the court? How'd you get it? How much does that seat cost? I know it costs nothing, but how do you get a seat in a case like this?
Well, you know, most people have to wait in line, but because I clerk for Justice Scalia, I don't have to.
you got one of those personal passes.
It's a nice connection to have.
Brian, thank you so much for spending some time with us this morning, and I hope we can do it again.
Me too. Take care.
You too. Brian Fitzpatrick, Vanderbilt Professor of Law, here on Nashville Morning News.